with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us now on the Score Hotline, which, of course, is presented by the great Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, home of the world's largest sports book. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know who was calling plays. I don't know how bad things are with the systems. Seems like the offensive systems aren't working as much as the communication systems at the actual stadium.
Yeah, I mean, the air raid siren was working pretty well yesterday. Bottom line, guys, is there's five games remaining in this Bears season, and they're five games back of the Green Bay Packers going into the tilt next Sunday night at Lambeau Field. So what I'm telling you is there is a chance.
A chance for what? I mean, that's what you fear next, is that when is it going to be the tipping point? And you wonder, Brad, a lot of speculation, but as we consider what is next for the Bears, when you look at the Cardinals and the way that they have built their team, which is the best in the NFL right now, they have the only team with 10 victories. Is there any copycat effect? Is there any blueprint to follow? Is there anything the Bears can learn from the Cardinals' experience?
Well, I was asking myself similar questions this week as I was looking at, okay, you know, how did the Cardinals get here? Because it wasn't long ago, 2018, when the Bears, everything was going well for them, that the Cardinals were bottoming out. Arizona was 3-13 that year, worst record in the league. They chose to fire Steve Wilks, making him one and done as the head coach. They traded Josh Rosen, who they had drafted 10th overall that year. So, you know, they saw one season of the coach and one season of the first-round pick at quarterback and said, well, we're gonna do this over. And they signed Cliff Kingsbury to be the coach. He had been fired at Texas Tech, had landed as the offensive coordinator at USC. They drafted Kyler Murray, number one overall. So you look at that and you say, well, sure, the Bears could be headed for a new coach. They might have more changes than that. Certainly appears that they've got the guy they want to try to make into their own Kyler Murray, their franchise quarterback, already here. And they don't have a first-round draft pick, so there isn't a clear blueprint. But I think what the Cardinals did after that is instructive, in my mind, because you say, okay, we've got this young quarterback, let's give him every chance in the world to be successful. And the natural reaction is, let's get him wide receivers, let's get him running backs, let's make sure the offensive line is good, let's get him a tight end. And when you keep going through that process, your defense is probably going to be pretty bad. And their defense wasn't good when they were 3-13. And so what's really interesting, and when you look at kind of how the roster has evolved the last couple of years as this team has steadily improved, is they kept the focus on the defense. And I think that's for a couple reasons. But number one, if you get this young quarterback and you outfit him with all these other players and you kind of let your defense slide a little bit, you're putting a ton of pressure on a first-year quarterback, second-year quarterback, you know, now a third-year quarterback to go out and score more than 30 points a week to win a game because your defense is no good. They've poured the vast amount of their draft pick capital into the defensive side of the ball. Now, you've got to encounter some good fortune along the way, I think, to bounce back from 3-13 and rise up. And it's yet to be told whether or not this can be sustained success for the Cardinals organization. But when you talk about encountering luck, you find Bill O'Brien, who's losing his mind in Houston and wants to basically give you DeAndre Hopkins for a running back that you had overpaid and no longer had use for in David Johnson. and a mid-round draft pick. Now they had to go ahead and then pay DeAndre Hopkins. So the Cardinals, I think, have encountered some good fortune along the way, but they've made some sharp moves when you get past the one and done for the coach and the quarterback.
So when we think of that game and we think of the Bears, they came back and they made that look better than it was, Brad. I mean, I think that the last touchdown and the two-point conversion, closing the game to 11 points, probably made that look like a better loss than it really was when you pick the whole thing apart.
Yeah, it wasn't a particularly close game, and it got, you know, far out of reach right away. Two interceptions turned into a 14-0 deficit, and you're sitting there midway through the first quarter wondering if the Bears can score 15 on Sunday, right? Because it was, at that point, it was going to take 15 points to win the football game. They, they're hanging in there. They're down 24-14 in the fourth quarter. Early in the fourth quarter, they get the roughing the kicker call on Pat O'Donnell to give them a first down. Now they're at their own 30. There's a little less than 12 minutes to play in the game. But if they can drive the field and score a touchdown, it's a three-point game. What happens? They run a play action. Cole Kmet asks to block Chandler Jones. It's really difficult to tell from the All-22 video the just tip of the ball that Chandler Jones got actually had anything to do with the interception. It was probably a poor choice by Andy Dalton on the play. He had David Montgomery wide open in the flat there, but it leads to interception number three, and Arizona gets a quick field goal. Now the Cardinals are up 13. There's 8 minutes to play, and like I don't think the Bears have the fourth quarter magic in them this week, and it was game over.
Brad, it was 14-7 when the play that bothered me the most happened, and James Conner catches a swing pass, Xavier Crawford in the open field, whiffs, and he whiffed badly. It was a feeble attempt at a tackle. James Conner makes a great play to break it and to score. It's 21-7. Xavier Crawford, not to pick on the guy, but I know he's the fifth or sixth option at the position. What's next, and how do the Bears get to the point where they have to rely on a guy like Xavier Crawford the extent that they do?
Well, Duke Shelley went out, and some of the other guys that put out there haven't played particularly well. Cornerback's a huge need for them looking ahead to this offseason. Huge need. You know, they talked about not wanting to just leave Kendall Vildor on the bench, guys, but that's what happened on Thanksgiving Day, right, in Detroit. He didn't get a single snap on defense, and if he was out there much yesterday, I did not see that. So they've got personnel issues at that cornerback position. And certainly, Vildor had 14 snaps on defense yesterday. And certainly some of the lack of tackling that they've had going on in the secondary has spread a little bit. You know, they had a guy making a hell of a lot more money than Xavier Crawford missing tackles like that in the open field earlier in the season.
You know, Brad, we talked on the pregame show about the kind of and the postgame show about the just the sort of leadership roles that are on this team, and wondering who are the leaders. I mean, who are the vocal leaders of this football team? And you know, I guess maybe we got into this with the rotating captains thing, whatever. But I mean, you know, back in the day, you knew Brian Urlacher was running the defense, and you knew Olin was running the offense, and pretty much the team. Is there that sort of clarity as to who the leaders of this football team are? And you know, maybe someday it's Justin Fields, maybe it's Roquan Smith, but who is it now?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, and that kind of I guess that's not directly related, but that's sort of in the direction of what kind of culture does this team have? And they've got a losing culture, right? And that's the bottom line. And they've trumpeted their great culture and everything for a couple of years now, as they have not won football games. And that's that's never Neverland stuff to me. Your culture is what your record says you are, right? In my opinion. And they lost their claim on high-level culture in the spring when Roquan was just about the only defensive starter to show up for OTAs at Hollis Hall. So if your culture is so fabulous, maybe your defensive starters would show up to work with your first-year defensive coordinator. So leadership, one voice that I thought made a lot of sense after the game yesterday, and you only get to hear the voices that the team chooses to bring out to chat with you after the game, but one voice that I thought made a lot of sense, and a guy that it means an awful lot to him every week, is David Montgomery. I think he is emerging as a younger leader on this team. And I'll tell you what, I like what I hear on just about a weekly basis from Jalen Johnson, the cornerback. Well, I thought he had a pretty good game yesterday, guys. You didn't see a whole lot of DeAndre Hopkins making plays. I believe he only had two catches. Yes, he had a 20-yard touchdown on that 4th-and-2 play there in the first quarter, but it was a pretty nice throw by Kyler Murray, some nifty footwork by Hopkins there in the corner of the end zone, and Jalen was right with him the whole way.
They only threw 15 times. I mean, they only targeted him twice because they only had to target him twice.
Yeah.
They didn't have to throw any more than that. So I'll go back and forth.
And I'm just saying, based on the action that came his way, the guy played okay. And the defense, you look at the numbers, James Conner has 3.8 yards per carry. Kyler only accounts for like 182 yards offense. And you're like, hey, pretty good defensive numbers. It doesn't tell the story of the game that Arizona kept having short fields. And I believe that if the Cardinals had to drive 65, 70, 75 yards, they probably would have pulled that off as well.
Brett, I was sitting next to you in postgame. Matt Nagy was talking. I could hear you rolling your eyes when he was asked repeatedly about the headset connection. But when he was asked about Tevin Jenkins, I thought it was interesting. His response was not necessarily what you wanted to hear, I think, if you were interested in seeing Tevin Jenkins being developed over the final five games of this year. He said it would be for depth reasons that he would play or he would be there and active. What did you think of his answer, and what do you expect?
Well, yeah, that's the answer that makes sense to me. And I get it that people want to see him play, and people are wondering if he's going to be some stalwart offensive lineman for them moving forward. But as we've talked about multiple times now, the guy's been out there for two practice and full pads, and he ran out there yesterday on the extra point team. When you put a young guy out there, I believe you want to do so creating the best opportunity for him to have some success and build some confidence. I don't think having him out there for two practices and pads and running him out on the extra point team is enough to say, okay, Kevin, you're ready to go get him at Lambeau Field. That just doesn't make sense to me when you consider what he's been through health-wise and injury-wise. Do I think there's a chance he could start before this season is over? Yes, I do. Do I think they're going to want to keep him as that swing tackle over Elijah Wilkinson, who's doing his third stint on the COVID-19 list right now? I also believe that. Could there be an injury that arises in the near future that creates an opening for Tevin? I suppose that is certainly possible when you consider what happens up front. But just rushing him out there because you need to see young guys for the future, I think you need to put him in a position where he can possibly build some confidence. And then, if you got people lining up calling to talk about Tevin Jenkins at some point, they're going to be the first ones on the blower for you if he does go out there and makes a mistake and the quarterback gets popped, right? So I think you got to be careful what you ask for, and let's see how this plays out. Five games is still a lot of football to play. It's a heck of a lot of football for a team that's dropped 6 or 7 and is right now, 4-8?
Yeah, and 2 of the 4 wins against Detroit, but they're now a winning team, so let's back off.
Why was Bruce Irvin out there for 17 snaps yesterday, guys? That's the thing I look at. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Do you need, you know, now Travis Gibson played more, but Gibson only had 31 snaps, and Bruce Irvin's responsible for that Kyler Murray second touchdown in the first quarter, the 9-yard scramble. It's 3rd and goal from the 9. And Irvin gets some pretty good pressure, but he completely opens the door for Murray by going hard inside there. You're playing against Kyler Murray, right? It's not a statue back there in the pocket. And by sort of abandoning his post there, in my mind, it just opens the door for Murray to score a touchdown. What are you going to see from Bruce Irvin in the final 5-6 games? Let the young guy play more. If people wondering about when are they going to see Tevin Jenkins, I think they should want to see more of Travis Gibson, and I don't know why he's only got 14 more snaps than a guy like Bruce Irvin, who's clearly not part of your future.
Great stuff, Big Z, as always. Appreciate it, pal.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
You too.
That's our guy, Brad Biggs. He's the football man of the Chicago Tribune. We're going to bring in Olin Krutz next. We're going to talk to the Bears great about the not-so-great Bears. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.